Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00004. Recorded on November 3, 2022. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Chapter 4.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
I figure each and every one of us has some measure of songs, like a personal jukebox inside of us that when we hear a certain song, it freezes us in our tracks. It like locks us into this tractor beam. We cannot turn away and ignore it, right? You know what I mean? You know what I mean by say that? I could be in the middle of anything, and there's these certain songs that'll come on. I don't know how many. I might have a dozen, two dozen, 100. I really don't know. But as soon as I hear, like, the first couple of notes start off, kick up in them, like, everything stops. Time stops. I stop. Focus has to go to that music somehow. The if, ands, and whys, it's all variable, you know? For every song, for every mood, for every person. But these kind of songs exist, and that's the point that I'm trying to say. I know I got plenty of them. If I got plenty of them, you got some at least, if not more. One of the songs, anyway, and I just heard it, was Am I Inside, right, by Alice in Chains. I don't know if you know that song. It's on the Sap EP, where it's predominantly acoustic guitar-based music. And I like it. I do. It's got one goofy song on it. I think a lot of the grunge era players in the day just had to do that. They had to just make like one silly song. I don't know why, but whatever, that's not my thing. It's just the song Am I Inside. Now it freezes me, because, you know, if you know me at all, you know I've gone through a life that had a lot of heartbreaks in it, right? I mean, way more than the average guy. I've had a lot of relationships, a lot of breakups. You know, there are people that married their high school sweetheart, and that's the only woman that they ever know. And that's God's way. You know, that's the right way for it to be. And, I've got a cousin, you know, my Italian cousin up in Jersey, exactly the life she's led, you know. They have heartbreak, you know. There's challenges. But I'm talking specifically about the romance kind of heartbreak, right? That they haven't had, as far as I know, you know. I mean, they seem to be very, very tight, very together, admirable relationship, really living the dream. I love those people. I do. I don't even know if they know how much I do. You know, I watch as my cousins live properly. You know, they've done life in the United States and New Jersey perfectly. But heartbreak has come. But again, I'm talking the romantic type of heartbreak, and that's where I come into the picture as the fucking maven of it. Just so many relationships and so many breakups, so many letdowns. You would think that a heart would just give up after a while, you know? I don't mean quit, like, pursuing love. Just cease to work. Not have the ability to feel, you know, go numb. And I've had moments of that, but I don't have an existing ongoing condition of it. I still experience the emotion and passion and drive and all that. So, but that's a good thing. It really is. It's a lot of the color of our existence. But this song, you know, it involves that kind of breakup. As a guy is looking for himself, he feels lost, and ultimately at the end, as the lyrics start to wrap up, it reveals the fact that the guy is missing the better half of him, quote unquote, better half of me, right? And that's like what it is. You become somebody else when you're involved deeply with somebody. You know, it's an addition to your life in so many ways, but even internally, you know, you've got like this, well, it's called the better half. It's something that takes up space inside of your existence, under your skin, inside your skull, however you want to draw that picture. And then when that person's gone, it's like half of you has left. And the remaining half of you is like corrupted and black and lost. Unanimated, right? You fall in love. It animates your existence. I used to call it supercharge. That was my word for it when I was young. You know, I'd meet somebody, and even before I was in the relationship, it's like they just stirred me. I could see the possibilities, you know. You could see your life flashing in front of your eyes with this person and all the things that happen along the way. You just get that sense. And it, like for me, I would become like 2, 3, 5, 10 times the being that I was. And that's even before you get involved. It's just knowing that there's a person out there that looks like they suit you. They meet your criteria. Even if you don't have your criteria drawn out, you know, it just, they measure up and fit, and you've got something to look forward to every day, and something that makes you want to strive a little bit more, to be a little bit more for somebody else. Now, we're not all that way. That's kind of how I am. I kind of just la 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 through life. It's just, you know, life is the drudgery, and I'm a simple little tiny ray of light that kind of just flows through moment to moment. But I'm not exactly supercharged about it at this stage of things. I mean, I give a little bit more, you know, in my marriage, in my household, than I would do for myself. But I'm not off on this, like, crazy. And it is crazy, right? It's a crazy tangent that you feel when you're, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm confusing myself here. That infatuation, right? Generally, with an infatuation, you have an unreal projection of somebody else. And as time goes by, the reality strikes and it blows the whole thing apart. These infatuations, they pass when they fail the test of reality, right? Something good and healthy will be stable the whole way. And it takes who, like I'm having a hard time describing this, and I should do better because I know so much about it, whether I like it or not. I described as this song lyrics lay out, right? How a guy feels like half of himself because his better half left, and the self that's left, it's like not even recognizable. He doesn't know if it's actually in him, behind him, next to him, over him, under him. It ain't there as far as he's concerned. But the truth is, it is there. But it just doesn't, it seems like nothing, right? It seems like nothing. And we should never feel that way. We should never really feel that way about ourselves. Again, what I'm learning in this one healthy relationship I've ever had, and you know what? I'm finishing the game on top. That's the good thing. I fucked up all along the way, but in the end, I got the good. And when you got the good, there's no false sense of who I am that comes with it. There's a very true sense of who I am that comes with it. It's really a different thing. And, you know, yes, I can attribute that to the fact that it's healthy and I don't, you know, I haven't really had that in my life. And another thing is I'm older and wiser, so my attitude and my contemplations are a lot different than they were when I was younger. Now, the guy writing it, I'm going to assume it was Lane Staley, but it's probably a combination of him and the... Jerry Cantrell, the guitar player, who really is, all right, unbeknownst to many, really is the heart of Alice in Chains. He is Alice in Chains. Lane Staley was that face that got put on it, but the band revolved around Jerry Cantrell, no doubt. And last I saw about him, and you know, I'm not like a fanboy or nothing, I saw something on TV. It's like, he took all his earnings and bought a bunch of land right up here in Oklahoma, not far from here. A bunch of acreage. Him and his father sit out on the front porch with shotguns and just watch the sunset. And then he goes on tour and comes back home to that, you know. It's like, he's a little bit different. He seems to be the kind of old grunge dude that I can respect and appreciate. But we'll see. I'll learn more about that, I guess, as time passes. But, you know, the singer was Lane Staley. And you know, anybody who's a fan of Alice in Chains kind of knows what happened with that dude. You know, you could recognize in a lot of the song lyrics. And that's why this one's a little bit different. It's very dark, like Lane Staley's stuff tends to be. It involves a breakup, and it has very creative imagery. But Alice in Chains' lyrics are good for that, you know. Their expression of darkness is very good. A lot of Lane Staley's lyrics start tending towards his personal problem, his battle with the drugs, and there's always a lot of, well, not always, but there's frequently a lot of reference to recovery, you know, 12-step recovery slogans and things like that, themes. It's hard to listen to an album by Alice in Chains as long as he was alive that didn't make some kind of reference to that. And he battled with the addiction, and he ended up young and dead, as so many other grunge people did. And whether it was suicide or not, I don't know. I don't know how the story ends up playing out in the end. And a lot of times if it's suicide, it just doesn't get revealed that way. But well, he was found dead after being dead for many days in some little dirty apartment, and you know, it was definitely drug related. I don't know. I don't know the whole story, and I don't mean to be out here to bastardize a guy's life. What I'm really talking about is the fact that Alice in Chains' lyrics were laced with themes of recovery, with that battle between being in their rooms and being out there, you know. And yeah, the thing about recovery, it's what they call an inside job, right? It's kind of sort of stealing reference to like the idea of theft, you know, like a group of criminals get together. And they're going to heist a bank, you know, and they get a guy on the inside working like the security guard or teller or something like that. They get the layout, you know, the floor plans, the scheduling, shit like that, you know, from somebody on the inside who gets cut in on the profits later on. That's the old inside job. But, you know, when it comes to self-improvement, right, just in general, that's also an inside job. We don't just like throw on a new suit and get a haircut and look all fresh and become different. That is superficial, and that's not how change is affected. See, recovery is change, right? A great saying that comes out of the 12-step programs, the fellowships in there, and one that I wish that Lane Staley and people like him would have come to grips with is the man I was will drink again. The man I was will drink again. Don't hear it every day. No, you don't hear it every day in the rooms, but it always plays through my mind. Even I don't go to meetings. I haven't for a long time. I remain sober, very much so, you know, as sane as I've ever been, and happy as I've ever been. I don't need to make no excuses for that. I'm just trying to avoid explaining why I'm doing it this way, because it's insulting. All right? I'll make it quick. It's very difficult for me to hang around in a crowd of people who are batshit crazy 24/7. And I'm an all-or-nothing kind of guy, you know, and I don't know that that can ever change or will ever change. I don't know that that's necessarily a character defect. See, I live between the extremes, and I get a balance. It's like my diet. I don't eat for 5 days, and then I go crazy for two. And in the end, I stay the same, or I might even lose a pound or two, right? So I live, you know, I bounce between the walls of extremities in most everything I do. So when I say I'm an all-or-nothing kind of guy, that's what I mean. And when I get involved, really with anything, but, you know, the fellowship groups, the 12-step fellowships, AA, NA, mostly NA, well, far and wide, mostly AA. Right? When I get involved with that, I'm in. I don't toe the water. I don't play around until everything seems, I just jump right to hell. I know what to do. You know, I know what to do for me. I know what to do for other people. I get very involved. But there's a whole lot of drama that goes along with people that have a whole lot of problems. So I have difficulty. So part of the extremities I deal with is I'll go in and I'll get involved for a year or two, and then I'll disappear for a couple of years. And I achieve my balance that way. I've actually got the kind of this niggling urge to, you know, start going back and getting involved a little bit, you know, giving back what was freely given to me. I absolutely believe that, and I believe in the 12 steps. You know, I don't find a contradiction between the steps of AA and my faith, my religion. I see them as going hand in hand. You know, a lot of people argue with that. I don't. It got me to where I am, you know. It's extremely necessary, foundational, and important all kinds of ways in my life, you know. I have a high regard for the program. The fellowship, it is what it is. You know, I can't say, oh, you're the greatest people in the world. No, these are not the greatest people in the world. And I'm part of it, you know. I'm not the greatest. I wasn't the greatest. I done a lot of fucked up shit. You know, I was sober and crazy. Quote unquote sober and crazy most of the time I was in there. I managed not to drink. I managed not to party. I stayed clean and sober, but I did a lot of fucked up shit along the way. And, you know, the sanity part of it was very questionable. And I was definitely involved with a lot of drama, you know, and I could point the fingers at everybody, but no, always the three fingers come pointing back at you. And I'll be double banging. I'll point two hands at you, and I'll get six coming back at me. That's how faulty I've been in my life. So I don't mean to exclude myself from the Hall of Fame of crazy fucking people. I'm crazy in my own way, and dealing with other crazy people is a lot more than I can bear with all the drama that comes with it. You know, there's a lot of destruction that happens. I'm out there trying to help, and then I ended up getting very hurt. It's the way it rolls with me, and I'm hoping that maybe with a little bit of time, wisdom, a settled life of my own, and maybe things can be a little bit different. Maybe I can take it a little slower. Maybe I could pick and choose maybe it doesn't have to be so extreme for me. Maybe just go like one night to one group consistently a week for a long time, you know. I started the process actually earlier in the summer. You know, I got a buddy, a good friend. He's sober longer than me, you know, long, long time. He's over 40 years now, I think, or close to it. And he's only just a couple years older than I am. And it's incredible that I have as much time as I do, as young as I am, you know. They come in very young. Well, you know, we made an excuse to get out on the bikes and go ride off somewhere on the weekends and go find an AA group that we both like, you know. And after a couple of times trying, I kind of lost my enthusiasm for it, you know. I was trying to do something to give me and him reason on a weekly basis to get together. I was trying to develop that friendship more, and that wasn't the avenue. I felt that was not what him and I needed to do as far as our friendship was concerned. Our friendship is elsewhere. It exists, but it's elsewhere. It's not based on AA. It doesn't want to be tied up with it. That's something I got to do on my own, apparently. And so I'm thinking about that. And then there's other ways to be involved with him, and we're working that out too. But anyway, so what did I say all this shit for? I didn't mean to get very personal about me and my recovery and all this stuff, but I'm talking about it being an inside job, right? Whether I'm in the rooms or not in the rooms, as long as I'm sober and clean, whether I'm crazy or not, whether I'm into some bad dramatics or not, recovery requires change, a transition from one thing to another. Like I said, the man I was will drink again, right? Whatever it was that I was had me drinking. I must change. And another saying is change or die. Change or die. That makes it kind of simple and succinct, right? Change or die. If you don't change, you will stay the same. And if you do stay the same, you will drink or party again. And then when you do that, you will die. We're all going to die. But it's how we're going to die. Are we going to die with honor? Are we going to die on a path to glory? Or are we just going to ash up and fucking fall to hell? How we die matters, probably more than anything else. So change is required. But see, I can't change. I can't make myself not be like extreme. The example I used, right? One extreme to another. I can't make myself not be an all or nothing personality. If that change was necessary, if that change had to happen, the only way it's going to happen is by the hand of God. Now, there's other elements of myself that have changed over time. Nothing's coming to head right away at the moment. I don't think it really matters. It's not about being personal about me. We're talking about recovery being an inside job. That's what the steps do. They work the insides to promote the change. And in the middle of that is a connection to your quote-unquote higher power, you know, which is later exposed as God with a capital G. And I don't care who you are, what you think, that's what it is, okay? That's what it was from the beginning. That's what it's all about. I didn't like it. I didn't like that fact. I was agnostic at best, atheist at worst, and somewhere in between, the violently opposed to God, to religion, to Christians, you know. I had a difficulty coming to terms with a higher power. I would try this, I would try that. Nothing worked until I got to the right higher power and then met that one on his own terms. But anyway, you know, we're trying to accomplish with AA, and if you're not in AA, just, you know, whoever you are in your life, we're on a spiritual journey. We're going to heaven or we're going to hell. Whether you like it or not, that's what's happening. And if you don't want to look at it, we're going to die. You know, how do you die? You die an asshole or you die a good person? And who determines what's good? But see, what's going on in our life, our experience, ultimately, because you can't take it with you when you go, right? When you go, all there is of you is the memory of you left behind here, and then whatever goes on if there is an afterlife. Right? That's it. And we're, you know, if you want to be remembered as a quote unquote good person, chances are you actually have to be a good person. Now, you could fudge it, you know. You could be famous and you can have handlers that market you as a good person, and you could be a raging asshole forever and ever and a day on top of that. But you could be known far and wide as a good person. Right? You bought it. You bought it. I'm pretty sure in your last moment you'll know that you're not a good person. And that's probably the most important thing, you know, where you stand with yourself. How do we become a good person? You know, we're not born a good person. There's choices that we have to make. There's tempering that occurs. You know, good parenting, being raised right, having a good, sound, healthy environment for developing in a quote-unquote normal manner. And there is such a thing. It's God's ways, right? God's ways is what's normal. Everything else that we see around here is very abnormal. And it's hard. It's hard to find oneself in this day and age in an environment conducive to your overall health. So what your environment can provide for you may or may not be a springboard to your ultimate goodness. And in so much as it is not, the rest is up to you. And you can't change the things that need to be changed. You have to rely on a power greater than yourself to accomplish that. Who I and millions of others choose to call God with a capital G, right? So what we're doing ultimately is this lifelong sequence of character building and, as the church would call it, holiness, right? Righteousness, holiness, character building. And that's the inside job. We're trying to find where our character is lacking and hand it over to God for correction. And then God does whatever God needs to do for each of us as individuals to make a transition away from really what ultimately is selfishness and into selflessness, right? That's what the steps do. They bring you from that selfish state of raging alcoholism to a selfless state of helping others. It's a lot of big stuff, right? A lot of big stuff. And a lot of this shit doesn't end up in Alice in Chains songs. I hear the references to recovery and 12-step programs in Alice in Chains songs. I hear the early beginnings. I hear a guy walking into rehab and being there for 2 days and starting to like pick up on slogans and just slapping them out in the song lyrics, but not really taking them in. And obviously the way things ended up, the guy didn't grasp it, right? He didn't grasp it. Now we lose out as a culture on what might have been. Him and many others like him, especially in the grunge era. God, every one of them, it seems, every group had a dead singer, right? Probably not every, but let's go through it. You had the whole Mother Love Bone thing that kind of kicked it all off with Andrew Wood was his name, right? Obviously, Kurt Cobain. Lane Staley, like we're talking about. In time, and in a very peculiar manner, we lost Chris Cornell, right? Probably the greatest of them all. If you want to tie Stone Temple Pilots into the grunge scene, definitely the grunge era, you had Scott Weiland and all his problems, right? So, like, we got all these grunge bands with no singers. You know, who survived? You know, the guy who I don't like, Eddie Vedder, right? He survived. That's another story. I don't want to get into all that shit, but character building, holiness, recovery ultimately is a matter of these things, and it's all an inside job. There's nothing we can do on the outside. There's no pill you can take. There's no book that you can read. Even though that becomes an inside job of a sort. It's coming from outside. It's coming from humans. The Bible itself, you could read the Bible all day, and all that's going to do is work towards establishing God's terms, and then you get that personal relationship. But without that personal relationship, the Bible ultimately doesn't mean much. It's very confusing, you know. Anyway, so the inside job. Recovery is an inside job. I got an inside job. The inside job of the year. See, I kind of got it plotted out in my head. My wife didn't put me to this. I kind of put myself to it. Every year that we're together in this little house of ours, that I'm going to do some project on the inside and some project on the outside, right? Now, the outside project, I don't get to determine this year because a tree, a big elm tree in my backyard, decided to tap me on the shoulder and say, "Listen, fucker, I'm your project this year." "What do you mean?" And then one third of it splits off and it falls across a neighbor's backyard, breaks a window. I got to spend 2-3 weekends out there cutting the thing down, chainsaws, I got a stack of wood that needs to be chopped. So that's going to carry me into the rest of the fall and into the winter. And, you know, there's still 2/3 of a tree up there. And it decided, "I'm going to just drop some of the main branches down and crush your fucking shed." Now the rest of the tree is like dangling precariously, so it's like I got to shell out the money to get somebody professional to come here and cut the rest of that thing down. Too tall for me to deal with, right? And there's power lines and shit. So $1,200 out, that's gone, and more wood for me to chop, right? That's my outside project of the year. And it's going to probably take me months to be actually done and put it all behind, get everything split. You know, there's a lot of wood. I didn't keep everything. The biggest chunks were hauled off, but there's a lot. And I save money by keeping the wood, and I'm going to use the wood for smoking meat. Yeah, elm for smoke, and people are going to say, "You can smoke with that." Let me tell you something. You can smoke meat with any hardwood, no problem. Some taste different than others, but it's mostly negligible. Only certain woods really have distinction, you know. Mesquite has distinction. Some say hickory does, and hickory and pecan are the same. They're both the hickory family. I don't know. I had hickory trees out in, when I lived in Tennessee, I had 100 of them or more in a yard. And that's what I was smoking with out there. It came out great. And a house here I had in Texas years before that, I had 2 pecan trees on the yard. That's what I was smoking with back then, and everything came out good. Now where I'm at, I smoke with whatever I get my hands on. My wife picked up bundles of wood that were just random, you know. A supermarket or Home Depot or something, like they just have like smoking wood, or not even just burning wood, like fire pit wood, just in small bundles. And she grabbed one or two of those. You don't even know what you're burning. It's any of 6 different kind of trees. A guy I knew from the church, he had a couple of big old hackberry trees cut down on his property, and he had all this wood he couldn't get rid of. I filled up a pickup truck full of it, maybe even 2, I don't know, but I got all this hackberry out there. We had a couple of catalpa trees in the yard that we had cut down a few years ago, and I kept a bunch of wood from that. I smoke with all this shit, and it all comes out very good, right? I mean, you don't notice a different flavor in the smoky quality when I smoke a brisket using all this odd wood. And when I made a smoked turkey, well, 2 smoked turkeys last year, it was the best turkey people ever ate in their life. So wood doesn't really matter. It doesn't. If you're using mesquite, that's got some kind of like toxic, and I know that's probably the wrong word, but a pungent kind of quality to it. So there is a difference with that particular wood. But most of the rest of the hardwoods, they're just all mellow. They work. You know, they're hardwoods, so they cook slow enough. They're not sappy. You don't want to throw pine logs in there because you're going to get sappiness and build up and fire, and it burns quickly, and it's It may leave a taste, you know? It may leave a taste, pine sol fucking taste or some shit. Stay away from the soft woods, but the hard woods would be okay. Again, that's way more than I needed to speak about any of that. That's the outside job. The inside job is really what I want to get to here. You know, the inside job is building my home studio slash office slash man cave, right? It's my inside man cave. I got a little workshop on the outside for different stuff too. But that's been the project. And you know, I put a couple hours in every week, sometimes more than others. And it's been going on all summer, a little here, a little there. And I've still got a little ways to go, you know, a little ways to go. Nothing too hard, nothing too difficult. It's just making the time and getting in there and getting it done. And you know, I'm trying to press myself. I want to be done before the holidays. Shit, I wanted to be done a long time ago, to be honest with you. It's time to get started, you know, with the all these different projects I got on my mind. What I had to do, it was just horrible. You know, the room was just horrible to begin with. And it was being lived in, so you couldn't do anything. The very small house, everything was just, but you got to understand, the house was a fixer-upper, and it needs a lot of fixer-upper, and the people that lived there previously were just terrible, and I can't emphasize terrible enough. Every little thing that they did in that house was completely back-assward and stupid and fucked up, and you had some like 50 years worth of all that that's just got to be undone and then put back together right. You know, that, and then you got the outside stuff going on, and you got to deal with the emergencies that come along the way. And when I first got there, we still had people in the house, right? Person, kid, but that was enough, you know. Left us one spare room to put all the shit in. Small one. But you couldn't work on that room because all the shit was in it. You couldn't work on the other room because a person was living in it. And every other house, room in the house was, you know, for specific purpose. And small. Everything is small and tiny. So you couldn't really do shit on the inside. Boy went off to the army. So now I'm able to start working on that room. And when I get that room done, we can... I don't want to because it's going to be my room, but we can move some of that shit temporarily and work on another room. And that other room is supposed to be like a kind of a spare room, slash like a sewing type of room or something, whatever my wife wants to do in there. Basically be her room, but there's going to be a bed in it for anybody who's going to be coming and staying, right? So a spare bedroom slash whatever she wants to do in there. And then we get those two done, you know, and then we start moving forward. So anyway, I was able this year, you know, I could have done it last year, except the cost and availability of all the stuff was very a deterrent. Let's just call it a deterrent, right? This year, things are no cheaper, but the availability is better, you know. So I was able to get the stuff. What I had to do... No, but to fix all the walls. And you know, down south, I don't know if you got it this way. I don't remember it being up north like this, but they like to texture everything, you know. Texture the ceilings, texture the walls. Everything's got to have the texture. I don't think it starts out that way. I think the you know, people get an error. They get a leak in the ceiling, so they texture over so you don't see the stain. I don't know. The only new house I ever had was in Georgia, and I don't recall having texture on everything in there. No, the shit was smooth all the way around, right? Which is what I was accustomed to up north. But this house got texture on top of texture, and you know, I had to put up crown molding, so I had to sand the whole bunch of that shit off just so it'll lay flush. If you've ever done that, you know what I mean, you know? You know, sanding the wall, sanding the ceiling, not the whole things, but about like 4 inches on the ceiling, 4 inches on the wall, all the way around the room, just to let the crown molding sit right. Obviously, you have to paint it all, and on the walls, I had to patch up all the holes, and there were plenty of them, and paint all that. Trim on the windows and on the doors. The doors themselves had to be painted with the semi-gloss white, but you had, I had to sand down like 50 years worth of built-up paint. I wasn't about to shell out for the molding and redo it all. I sanded what I could. It still ain't great, but it's good enough. Good enough. And, I had to paint the walls, multiple coats, paint the ceiling. I painted the ceiling. That's like sacrilege. You don't do that, right? You always keep the ceiling white. But I got an idea in my head to put a nearly black, like midnight blue, gunmetal gray, like real dark gunmetal gray or gunmetal blue, whatever the hell you call it. Grayish, bluish, blackish coat of paint, or multiple, like 4 coats of paint on the ceiling. And then white trim. Snow white trim all the way around. Looks great. But it took all that work to do that, I'd put the crown molding up, which is a fucking pain in the ass. I've done it two other times in my life, and it's like I do it every like 10 years or so. So whatever skills I acquire by the end of the project, they go to hell, and I got to go, start from nothing. It was a real ass whip. Just to make a square around the room. It wasn't even all that complicated, but, none of the angles are good 90s. None of them are under 90. They're all over 90. I didn't take the chance and try to figure out how well I could cope out the corners. I tried to just make angles. It didn't work, so I had to putty patch everything. And, yeah, that's some real fucking trailer trick. But I did it well. It come out good anyhow, but it was a pain in the butt. It took some time. And a lot of aggravation, My wife saw me get mad. I chucked shit, and it was frustrating, frustrating. Well, you got like 15-foot pieces of fucking wood. I had to, set them all together. I couldn't buy them that long in my truck. The glue wasn't sticking that I bought. Sometimes it would, sometimes it wouldn't. I had no idea what the hell was going on. It was driving me fucking crazy. And then you get, you put this stuff together, you cut the angles outside, you got to carry it across the yard, get it through the house. It's like Eddie Munster with the fucking baseball bat trying to go through the front door. Dogs are all in the way and skittering around your feet while you're trying not to knock into crap and break what you just made. You have to do it till you get, I would always overcut the size so as not to undercut it and really fuck things up. So it'd be 3-4 trips just shaving a little off. What a fucking pain in the ass that was, right? But it's all done. It's all hung. It's been that way for a little while. I got into a problem procuring the flooring. I had picked out flooring that I based the entire room off of, right? And when I saw it in the Home Depot, it was 99 cents square foot or whatever. And then the price went up to like $1.30 a square foot. And I'm like, what the fuck, And then it just disappeared. Like you couldn't find it. It wasn't on the website anymore. I'm talking to the guys. It just disappeared. I had this little sample I was going around with, and I was matching up the paint with and all this shit. And then all of a sudden, other things I did was like I stripped down furniture and I refinished it all, refurbished it all. And I was matching it up to this little sample piece that I had. Yeah, everything is meant for this floor, and I can't get the fucking flooring. So I don't like have to settle for something that's kind of sort of close in the same ballpark. But not the same. And disappointing. I go into the Home Depot, a month or two later to look at some of this other stuff, see if there was anything that might possibly match better than what I had settled on. We even went to the Lowe's to see what they had. And we walk in there, and like, all right, here's the aisle where they got all this shit. And we're just standing there. I walk over to the wall, and I'm looking, the gray oak this and weathered that, and my wife calls me back over. She says, look at this. Doesn't this look kind of like what, you know, what you were going for originally? And there's this whole stack. It had to be, I don't know, 4 or 5 pallets full of this stuff, right? It's a lot of ground. And it was on clearance, 99 cents a square foot. It's like, yeah, it does look a whole lot more like, you know, what we originally planned on. Well, why don't we just grab this shit? And she's like, all right, I'll go get a cart, right? So we'll go get one of those carts where we can load up this thing with all this flooring. I had to get 9 boxes of it for this little room, right? I'm not about to carry that on my shoulders, not that day. And so she's away, and I'm looking at it, and I'm just looking to see what it's called, you know? Just curious, you know, what the hell's it called? How come I haven't seen this yet? Is it something new? But why would new shit be on clearance? I didn't get it. I didn't understand. I'm looking at it. I'm trying to read the label. And in real small print somewhere on the side, it said Bishop Manor Oak. Let's get the fuck out of here. That's exactly what I wanted, right? Where did it just suddenly come from? It disappeared. Your price changes and disappears. And then 2 months later, here it is. A whole fucking ton of it. They can't get rid of. Loaded it up, so it was a lucky day, right? Got lucky, and everything goes back according to plan. That flooring still needs to be installed. I just got the baseboard molding in. I bought this big old 5 1/4, you know. Spent the extra. I want my room to be kind of nice. And it's a little things like that, you know, larger baseboard molding. I got to do the closet still, but I did it in the main part of the room, got that around in a few hours. Not too much of a pain in the ass. Yeah, but the flooring got to go in. Then I got to put the quarter round on top of that. And I also got to put a coat of paint on all the molding. Most of the molding in the room. The crown molding, the baseboard, all that shit. Because I had putty on it and I got the nail holes. You know what I mean? If you've ever done it before. So, yeah, that's what remains to do. Eventually, I got to get a new ceiling fan in there. That's not an emergency, but that's going to happen somewhere down the road. And, yeah, I was doing this baseboard molding the other day, and I had told you I had that problem with the glue with the crown molding. So I ordered some special glue, an accelerator, and a, you know, spray can that's, like, meant for this kind of stuff. I got that glue on my fingers. I couldn't get my fingers apart. I finally got it apart. I couldn't get that glue off of them. Soap, water, peroxide, alcohol. Fucking, I threw on my Panade aftershave. Just anything I could find. Nothing touched this stuff. And I had it on, actually, my right thumb and forefinger and a little bit on my right middle finger. I don't know how. I just grabbed something. A little bit, and it just smushed all over everything, and it just instantly adhered. It would not come off. I had to sandpaper it off. I took fine sandpaper block. Just back and forth for like 20 minutes to take all that shit off. You know what? When I put them seams together on those longer pieces, that shit just stuck right away, and it held right up. It didn't take 2 minutes, you know, and I was able to move that shit around and get it up on the wall and everything. It was good stuff. I paid for it, but it was good. It worked. I did not get the aggravation that I got with the crown molding. Well, the crown molding is always an aggravation. So, yeah. Ultimate goal, studio and an office. Because I want to open up my creativity once again. And all these projects, what I'm doing now, right? Like a sort of kind of internet radio show / podcast thing. You know, a voice I call Monologics, right? A voice monologue. And my music, I create music. I haven't done it in a few years, but I got like 20, 25 songs that I've done in the past. And I want to get back into doing that. That's the studio aspect of it. Right? I want to write a book. I don't know what book. I don't know exactly what kind, whether it be a story or a nonfiction or technical or theological or something. But there, in my life, before I die, there's going to be a book with me as the author. I start them up and I never finish them. But that's something I want to achieve creatively. And I got all this general office stuff I got to do. I want to do, related to my creative endeavors. I want to build up a website. I used to do websites, so that's not a problem. That's more fun than anything else. I like the design of, figuring out what design I want to go with. Excuse me. And then I get into like the technical and semi-technical shit about it, deciding how I want to, like, go hosting and things like that. I don't know how I want to develop it, what tools are out there now. I used to do everything the hard way, and I don't know. We'll see. It that's half fun for me, though. I don't mind doing that stuff. Office for just home management tasks, just minding the budget and whatever. Everything comes with the house, storing things. I literally got to make a physical file cabinet for all the fucking documentation that stacks up in the course of life between two people. And even the kids, even though they're adults and they're in the military and shit, so you still hold on to stuff for them. And, still, like I said, something of a man cave. There's going to, gun safes, toolbox, boot rack, a wall hanging for all my hats, and obviously all the guitar stuff, and maybe even a prayer corner or something. This is what Orthodox people do. We haven't set it up yet in our house because we're still making room. It's probably going to end up in our bedroom, but you make a little home altar, a corner of prayer with your icons on the wall, incense and all that. And we haven't done it yet, but I'm telling you what, I'm looking forward to it. That's funny. Real quick deviation here. It's like I was Protestant, after I was done being Antichrist of varying sorts, I came to faith and walked into Protestantism. And I did that for 13 years, and for the past almost two now, not quite, I've been in Orthodoxy, right? In Orthodoxy. Now, Orthodox, like Roman Catholicism, actually Roman Catholicism is like Orthodoxy, it's very quote-unquote religious, right? There's a whole lot of mysticism, there's practices, there's ritual. And Protestantism generally doesn't have much, if any, of that at all, right? So it's like you jump out of a faith and into a faith / religion. Religion brings so much more. And, there was a time that I didn't want all that baggage. It just, I guess, deep down or at some level, it was just way more confusing than I needed when my searching was for my relationship with Christ, With that established, now it's like you want to fulfill. That's where I got to. I have a very well-established relationship with my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and now I want to fulfill all the capability and possibility of it. It's like my walk of faith is you draw a picture, right, as an illustrator, and you draw the outlines of everything, right? And it creates this form. And then once you have all those parameters established, then you come back with your crayons and fill in all the colors, right? I'm in the fill in the colors part of my walk. Does that make sense to you? Wow, that just came off the top of my head. I never heard that before, but that makes sense to me. That's what's going on here. So anyway, yeah, part of this situation is somewhere along the way, if I don't make a prayer corner in my office studio, the whole process of creating the office studio will have left a corner available in the bedroom for it. So one way or another, that's coming, as a result. The big thing at the heart of it, though, is this computer situation, right? And I told you, I refurbished a desk, a hutch, and a bench to go with it. But there's going to be some computer shit happening. I currently have three computers. One I purchased, a Dell, in 2004, right? I spent like $2,000 on it. It was like top-of-the-line shit back then. Close to it. Off-the-shelf top-of-the-line. I could have done better for more. That computer still works. Now, I've added all kinds of stuff to it over time. The motherboard has never failed in all these years. It's insane. I don't know how many power supplies I've gone through, how many graphics cards I've gone through, how much RAM I've gone through. I did blow out a hard drive somewhere along the way. Things have happened to it, but it's all kind of plug-and-play components that are easily just replaceable. And the heart of it, the processor never failed, the motherboard never failed, and the thing keeps going. It just keeps cruising right along. It's still a very good computer. As old, it's 18 plus. It's almost, what? I think in like February or March, that computer is going to end up being, well, how old? From 04. I can't do math right now for some reason. It'll be 19 years old. Yes, it'll be 19 years old in a couple of months. Still going. Still going. It's got all the moving I've done in all these years, you know. It has gone and it still works. It's incredible. I got a laptop from that I bought in 06 when I was starting to get the idea in my head that I was going to be a traveling man, an over-the-road truck driver, which I did do eventually. But I was setting up. I was going to, you know, live in a truck. And the center of my being was going to be this laptop computer. I got one of the early satellite air cards. I was grandfathered in at a really low price through Verizon when it was a new thing. And that thing still works. And that was not a top of the line. That was a bottom fucking feeder. That was a gateway piece of shit, like under $600 laptop. It still works. It's got Microsoft XP on it. You know, that's the operating system. I'm about to replace that, and that's what I'm going to get into. Ubuntu. I'm going Linux. I'm getting away from Microsoft and Bill Gates. And finally, right? A lot of the reason that I have not been inspired to even do anything on computers in the last year or two is because when this COVID shit started, and you just see Bill Gates, everything about Bill Gates that has nothing to do with computers, and then I see just like Microsoft anything. I want to rip the hair out of my head that ain't even in my head no more. You know what I mean? Hair that ain't there, I'm trying to claw out. I'm reaching into my fucking skull and trying to just get rid of the fucking ghost of Bill Gates living in there. I want nothing to do with any of that. I don't give that fucker any money, any attention, any anything, you know? I think he's a bad, bad man. That's a whole nother story. But yeah, I got a buddy of mine from church who's going to put together for me a USB drive that's going to start up Ubuntu on the laptop. And then I'm going to just start learning how to use that. Eventually, I'm buying a brand new computer. And it looks like now I'm going to go Dell again. It's a Texas company, and the Dell that I bought is pushing 19 years old and still smoking, still working great, right? It's hard to walk away from that. Hard to walk away from that for me. I'll pay a couple hundred bucks extra, I guess. And I'm going to put Ubuntu Studio on it. Ubuntu Studio. That's Ubuntu, the operating system. I don't know what they call it. A release, a variation of Ubuntu, of the Linux family of operating systems. I'm still not familiar. I don't know the first fucking thing. I'm just getting into this, so forgive me for being preschool. But I'm going to Ubuntu Studio. It's a variant of Ubuntu. It's probably pretty much the same thing, but it comes like pre-installed with the multimedia software suite, which I'm just going to go for the convenience of. Hopefully all the drivers and everything I need just kind of connect up on the install. That's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for complication. I have a lot to learn, and a lot of the learning will be from the problems that come up along the way, but I need something that works so I can get creative, right? I got a third computer, which was an old work PC, business PC. And my old boss, when I was doing a website development, he just told me I'd keep it. That was from 2010. It may even be older than that. We got it in 2010. It was refurbished. So I don't know how far that goes back. It's not bad. It's not great. It's running Windows 7. What's important about that computer, as far as I'm concerned, is it's got Photoshop on it. You know, Photoshop 5, which I'm not spending the money to replace. I'll get something similar to that for free in the Linux environment. But until I'm up and running with that, I got to try to get a couple of more miles out of this refurbished PC from 2010. Let's just call it the Windows 7 PC. The problem with that PC, though, is I can't get a replacement cooling fan that fits. I've got it all kinds of jerry-rigged in there, and it's been held down with wire. It doesn't fit flushly. You can't screw it. It's fucked up, you know. But it's still spinning the wheel. Sooner or later, the processor is going to want to burn on that. You know, I got to check it periodically. I got to put some of that silver paste putty shit on it, keep it from burning up. But that computer is not long for the world. That's got to go. That one goes, it's going to get replaced by a brand new Dell. And that new Dell is going to be Linux. And it's kind of a start all over. But yeah. Ubuntu is actually a Zulu word, right? Ubuntu it has a meaning. I looked it up and I forget what it is. I'm looking it up again right quick here in my American Heritage Online. Here it is. Ubuntu, a philosophical doctrine or approach to life that emphasizes social unity and generosity of spirit. And it comes from Zulu, right? African Zulu. Zulu. Zulu Ubuntu. A lot of ooh-ooh-ooh-ooh-oohs. Zulu, like from Star Trek Zulu, right? That, the Asian dude who in real life has developed into a real social media douchebag, right? Him and Meathead from Archie Bunker. These guys are like real raging far leftist, very outspoken, very angry, cynical and sinister people. I can't even tolerate the look at it, but yeah. Once or twice in my life, I tried Twitter. And it's like, you know, if somebody posts something interesting that has anything to do with, like, politics in any way, shape, or form, and if it's, like, a conservative or centrist kind of voice, all the leftists just run to it like flies on shit, like moths to the fire, and attack. They have to, you know, just like, that's all they do. They sit on their fucking Twitter all day long and just wait for something posted by some senator or whatever. You know, it's like if you want to see what this person's got to say, they say it in their post. And if you want to see what other people got to say about what they're saying, you start looking at the commentary and it's all these fucking Zulus and meatheads and, you know, and it just shows you how fucked up humanity is, just how mean-spirited we are deep down collectively. You may be a very nice and kind person, but the 10 people next to you, they're all sinister, vile douchebags. And yeah, I put Mr. Zulu in that category. I forget what the fuck his name is. And you know what? I just went through I've been watching all of Star Trek from everything, but I went through, you know, I started with the original series, what they're calling it now, and that's one that Zulu was in, and it's like I actually started to have a hard time watching it when he was there. That's how agitating that person is. You know, we don't need to be that way. We can express our point of view without being real scumbag about it. I'm sure most of the shit that I say is rubbing somebody the wrong way. But I bet you very little of it is in such a wrong way that it's abrasive to you, you know? I'm not saying things in a mean spirit. I'm not really. I know anything I say about my faith is going to rub half of everybody the wrong way. It just will. But I'm not saying it in a mean way. I'm not saying that I'm this way and you're that way, because you're that way, you're a fucking asshole, and just like start hitting you with a litany of all kinds of negative descriptions, adjectives, names, you know. I'm not. I recognize my trip. You know, I started talking about this transition, right? Recovery is an inside job. Change or die. The man I was will drink again. There's a transition that happens on the inside, and it's a whole walk from this place to some other place through all kinds of other places. And like, I've seen enough in my own being, in my own time, of transition that put me from place to place, from ideology to ideology, belief to belief, you know, philosophy to philosophy, theology to theology, all this stuff, politics to politics, whatever, any construct of the mind, you know. And there seems to have been room in the world for me. So why wouldn't there be room in the world for all kinds? And I get that. See, I've become, it's not that I've become centrist in my views. I've always been. I am very much morally conservative. But not so much that I would impose that upon people, right? There's room for immorality in this world, whether I like it or not. It's a fact. How do we deal with it? You know, do I say I'm a moral person and that's an immoral person? Must I kill that immoral person so that the world would be more moral? See, that's not the way this shit's supposed to be. And it goes both ways. Immoral people feel this way about moral people. Right? They want to kill them dead and have their what? Utopia. Right? You can't have utopia without killing off people who are not like-minded. That's part of it. Don't get me started with utopia. I hate that shit. It's stupid. Anyway, and I'll probably end up getting on it anyway. But Zulu, social media douchebag. Twitter is a cesspool, humanity. Yeah, not Twitter's not just a cesspool. It's truly the digital ass end of humanity. You know, it's like I see the ass end of humanity on my job here when I'm doing my custodial tasks. You know, the people throwing down garbage, people not flushing the toilet. I come in this morning, right? I go in the men's room. I have to take a piss after my commute. Walk in there, hey, toilet bowl sitting there, and just a few logs of turd just floating around casually having a good time. Somebody took a shit and got up and walked out, didn't even bother to flush a toilet, you know? So far as I could tell, they didn't even bother to wipe their ass because there was no toilet paper in there with them logs. How fucked up is this? People go in there and take a shit and they just get up and walk away. They don't flush, they don't wipe. All right? Cesspool. Ass end of humanity, right? That's on the physical way, but this is the digital one. That's what Twitter is. Twitter is these same people, right, that don't wipe, don't flush, and now they're getting on the internet and they are sharing their commentary, their thoughts with you, and trying to convince you somehow that they're right, you know, with all that lack of character. And there's just thousands of it, you know, thousands of them just lining up one after the other. I guess the tone of Twitter might be up for some changing, as things are. Apparently there's been an operational level changes. We'll see what the impact of that's going to be, but I don't know. People are people. I think people are still going to suck. I just think it's going to allow everybody to join in and suck equally. You know, it's just social media is just an extension of just the public mainstream media. It's the idea is to control the narrative, right? Somebody in charge, somebody with the money, they got a story they want to put out there. They've got an angle that they want to impose upon people. And I guess the belief is that, you know, we could say whatever and people are just going to believe what we say. Control the narrative, you know. What gets me about that, it's not the fact that people do that. It's not the fact that, well, it's kind of the fact that people think that that's doable, right? The real problem is the apparent susceptibility of people to these things. But the idea that just because you saw it on TV and that just because you saw it on the internet, it must be true, right? We're either too stupid, too lazy, or both. They're not mutually exclusive. And with these politicians, right, with the politics and stuff, this idea that they could just say whatever and then millions and millions of people will just fall in line and believe it. Oh, like zombies, you know? Lemmings going over the cliff. Is that real? Are people really that way? I tend to think not. Obviously, a lot of people don't immerse themselves in politics. That's a headache. I don't want to immerse myself in that shit. Every time I have, it sucks. It's a misery, right? People who have never bothered to or have bothered to and refuse to do it again, they're going to be, quote unquote, out of the loop, you know, outside the loop. And it's kind of like, you know, with your faith, being agnostic. So, yeah, okay, Washington, D.C. is there and Austin, Texas is there. And I don't really give a shit, you know. That's agnostic. You know, it's politically agnostic. Apathetic. And I don't even know why I left. That's exactly what it is, you know. It's apathetic. Which is sad in itself, because we have civic responsibilities to a citizen, you know, a man. To a man, we have a responsibility to make sure that this shit doesn't get upended and taken away, and that we get imprisoned, whatever. You may believe in slavery, right? Nine Inch Nails says happiness in slavery. But this apparent susceptibility of people to just buy into anything, you know, let's just discount people that don't really give a shit. Now, that leaves you with those who do. So if you are leftist, any leftist politician saying some leftist thing, you're just going to fall in line with automatically. There's no change there. And some right-wing person is not going to be affected by it. It does nothing to nobody. It's just a stupid game. People just chucking rocks at each other. It's more like shit. It's like monkeys in a cage having a shit fight, you know? They grab their turd off the ground, chuck it at the next monkey. He throws it back, misses, hits a third monkey. Now all the monkeys are running around grabbing shit and just chucking at each other. That's politics in America. Probably all over the world. Are people really that susceptible to this shit? No. They either don't give a fuck or they're already firmly in their place. You know? How do we change? We don't. You're left, you're right, or you try to be center. The sober thing to do is to try to be center. You know? Center is not really a position per se. It's a way of getting along. It's a way of maintaining our conversation. That's how I see it. That's where I put myself. In spite of my very right, conservative, morally conservative way, I'm not about imposing that on everybody else. And I'm certainly not about immoral people imposing their immorality on me. There needs to be a basis of discussion and decisions made. It ultimately comes down to law. Where do you derive your law from? What makes right, right? What makes good, good? You have to make a decision. Why is it not legal to murder somebody? Where does that come from? Who made that decision? See, we have to decide where these parameters are drawn or derived from, right? Where the rules are derived from and how to assemble parameters around them. It's very complex. And this is where the conversation has to happen. But it's a susceptibility of people. I don't think people are generally suckers. They either just, they don't give a shit, or they do. And when they do, they're not going to be swayed. But we're being played as if people are stupid and swayable, gullible. I don't know. I don't see it. But do I think people are stupid and gullible? Yeah. But not when it comes to what they believe. I don't think so at all. I don't know. I live in a bubble where, like, this stupidity and, like, a hive mentality, it's not really tolerated. I'm an independent-minded guy, and it turns out that the people who I associate with are generally independent-minded, too. I mean, within the church, there's a kind of hive mentality. You know, we all, as Orthodox Christians, defer to our clergy, for example, right? You won't find that so much in Protestantism. You do find it, but you won't find it so much. Everybody's independent there, and independent to a fault. Within Orthodoxy, we do have a point of assimilation, you know. What is right and what is true is given from God to the apostles, to the bishops, to the priests, to us people. We recognize a hierarchy, and there is something of a hive mentality. We believe similarly, we speak to each other, and we keep each other in line. But at the end of the day, we all think for ourselves. So it's not totally, you know, a dependency issue. And so that just, you have general stupidity and then the hive mentality. It doesn't function in my circles. It just ain't there, you know. Zulu with the social unity. What does that even mean? Is that like socialism? Is that like everybody being on the same page, of the same mind? That goes back to that idea I was saying before. It's like you believe one thing and you have your opposition. You can't have your utopia unless you kill off your opposition. You're unlike-minded people. You know, you have to kill them in order to be happy. Or you have to change them away from what they think. One way, you know? Which doesn't happen. So how do you get social unity? What does that even mean in terms of Zulu description of Ubuntu, right? You know, generosity of spirit, what does that mean? That seems ambiguous also. I don't even know where to begin with that. If you just look at the spirit of, like, people, like, everybody's got their inner person, their inner man, the one that goes off into the afterlife. You know, you might say a soul, right? Who we are, how we are, is exhibited temporally as not flushing a fucking toilet, right? Our character, you know? What we do on the outside shows who we are on the inside, I would think. And what, we're generous with that spirit? Well, the spirit of many people is as ugly as the lack of character. And so on a spiritual level, we suck, and on a temporal level, we suck. What is this generosity of spirit? Does that mean that, like, you are a generous person? You have, like, that would be a good thing. And social unity would be a good thing, but how to achieve these things when you have so many people of different mindsets, right? How generous you want to, it almost seems like communism to me, this Ubuntu idea. I don't really know. I'm going to look more into it. I probably shouldn't have said anything about it. But yeah, it seems to be like the Zulu word for some kind of utopia or some shit. And you know what? I have my PC, and it comes on, and the desktop says Ubuntu on it. I'm just going to let my own PC be my own utopia, right? I can have my own little imaginary creative world in there. And when I spin away from the desk, then I'm in the real world again, where there is no utopia, where things are exactly the way they're supposed to be, suck as it may. I said it before, I say it again. This world is supposed to suck. Everything is just the way it's supposed to be to make us do what we're going to do and allow to happen what's going to happen. This is a place that is set up for us to operate within free will. You couldn't have it any other way. without taking free will away. Just like a utopia you cannot have, you can't even pretend to have until you kill off everybody who does not think the same way you do. And ultimately, when you carry it all out, you're going to end up killing everybody and leaving yourself standing. And you may hang on to a couple of slaves that you can dominate. But you're going to find that out of billions and billions of people, no two people think exactly alike. And when it starts to look like maybe you're really close to it, somebody's going to change. Because change or die. Recovery is an inside job. The man I was will drink again. We must change. We must get better. How do you do the math of billions of people being different to begin with and changing all along the way? How do you wrangle all of that into social unity? How do you do it? How do you create a utopia in this fucking mess? Good luck. Einstein couldn't do that fucking math. Anyway, moving along.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.